listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Holiday 2020-2021 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part A. Requiem for a Dream by Keith McNally. Of all my restaurants, Balthazar has been the hardest to watch suffer through the pandemic. But I have hope and my memories. Apart from closing for repairs several years ago and a few days after 9/11, Balthazar has been open every day for the last 23 years. And then COVID hit. Six other restaurants of mine have shut their doors due to the pandemic, but none affected me as much as Balthazar's closing. The idea of a large, bustling restaurant such as Balthazar struggling for life is like watching an experienced swimmer drowning. I can't stomach it, and prefer to remember my restaurant as it was when it opened 23 years ago. I first saw the Balthazar space one early Sunday morning in 1995. It was a rundown leather warehouse called Adar Leather. At the time, I was building a vodka bar two blocks away and had passed this worn-out storefront every day for 9 months without noticing it. That changed when I spotted a handwritten for rent sign on its shabby door. Adar Leather was a 12,000-square-foot space on two floors that, from what I could see through its unwashed windows, was packed with strips of leather. The store was so down at heel that it gave the impression of needing its 500,000 leather straps to patch together its declining business. I was struck by the corner location and storefront that seemed to stretch all the way to Harlem. I immediately saw its vast potential as a restaurant, and I jotted down the phone number into my small Filofax. The next day, I called the landlord, and a month later, I signed a 15-year lease. As with all of my restaurants, my eagerness for the space died the second I signed the lease. Overnight, its location, one block from Soho, felt like another borough, and the number of squealing rats on Crosby Street seemed to increase drastically the day after I signed for the space. Overall, it now felt like a god-awful location. I had come up with the notion for Balthazar 3 years earlier while living in Paris. Like most of the few good ideas I've had, this one came about accidentally. I was searching for antique curtains and Clignancourt's flea market when I stumbled across a photograph of a huge Edwardian bar. Behind the bar were shelves stacked 20 feet high with a magnificent display of liquor bottles. These bottles were flanked on either side by two towering statues of semi-naked women in a classically Greek style. I was so impressed that I said to hell with the antique curtains and bought this battered photo instead. I carried the sepia-tinged image with me for the next 3 years, thinking that if I found a space with a sky-high ceiling, I'd build such a bar. Stepping into the tannery, I found that ceiling. Construction of Balthazar began in January 1996. The $2 million required to build the restaurant was provided by my new investor, Dick Robinson, the CEO of Scholastic Press. Once I took possession of the space, my first decision was to block out two huge windows on the building's side street. For most restaurateurs, dining room windows are sacrosanct. But when you like breaking rules as much as I do, you tend not to give a toss about convention. Anyway, I believe that restaurants, like plays and films, work best when they create their own world. Being exposed to the outside world while dining is like hearing the doorbell during sex. My co-designer, Ian McFeely, and I stared at my photo of the colossal Parisian bar, wondering where the bar should go, assuming, that is, we could build it. It took us 2 weeks to work out its location, but once we did, the rest of the floor plan fell quickly into place. Bars and the customers they attract give tremendous life to a restaurant, and where they are positioned is vital to their success. Ideally, a bar should have a strong identity, separate from the dining room, but be seen or sensed from all corners. Ian also acted as general contractor. We never used architects' plans when building Baltazar. As ideas came, we simply scribbled crude drawings on whichever bits of paper were within reach. Whatever I might have saved on an architect's fees, I spent more on fixing my endless mistakes. But the formidable semi-naked female statues were another matter. Google had yet to be invented. Neither Ian nor I had any idea where we could find such vast statues. Known as caryatids, or whether they could be found at all. Ian eventually suggested the 2 6-foot statues be carved by a classically trained sculptor friend of his, Brant Junso, whose only question was a discomforting one. Did I know a woman with a voluptuous body and firm breast, like those in the photo, who was willing to model for him? Classically trained sculptors have all the fun. What I did next, I would never risk in these ardently prudish times, but I asked 2 waitresses from my vodka bar, Pravda, if they would like to model topless for the sculptor. Without batting an eyelid, they both agreed. The faces, bodies, and breast of the statues are a mix of the 2 waitresses. Which parts are from which woman, only the classically trained sculptor knows. In the photos, paint the town, locals at the Baltazar Bar, Joan Didion and John Gregory Dunn at a book party in 1997, a seafood spread at a benefit honoring Donna Karen and Andy Cohen in 2009, the owner at the entrance to his opus, paper napkins for customers to write down their numbers, the iconic red awning, Katie Holmes and Tom Cruise exit the Soho restaurant in 2008. Baltazar's signature pain de seigle. Actress Gwyneth Paltrow and director David Fincher at the after party for the premiere of The Game in 1997. While building Baltazar, I would occasionally have lunch at a restaurant called Jerry's on Prince Street. That's Jerry's on Prince Street. In the 90s, Jerry's was terrifically popular with New York's art crowd. One time, eating alone, I was approached by Jerry himself and given his unsolicited wisdom on Baltazar's chances of success. You're going to do 200 covers at lunch, but you'll struggle at dinner because no one goes there at night, he prophesied. Only someone brazen enough to call a restaurant after himself would presume to say such a thing. I've often been wrong about the success of other people's restaurants, but I've never had the gall to offer my opinion to the owner's face. In hindsight, however, I would much rather someone say this to my face, like Jerry did to me, than say it, as most restaurateurs do, myself included, behind the owner's back. 9 months into construction, I still didn't have a chef. In 1997, restaurateurs found their chefs through word of mouth. 3 months before opening, a good friend of mine, Pippa Cohen, told me of a reportedly brilliant chef, Riyad Nasser. When I first met Nasser, he was working at the prestigious four-star restaurant Daniel. I thought Nasser seemed suspicious of me, but I always feel that way with people I admire, and I admired Nasser from the get-go. Like good craftsmen, the chefs I respect most are those uninterested in the celebrity aspect of the job. That was how Riyad came across. Before the meeting ended, he suggested doing a tasting for me the following week. Nasser's food was incredible, and I immediately offered him the job. He agreed, but a week later, sheepishly told me he came with another sous chef from Daniel, his working partner Lee Hansen. I was shocked, as this now meant I had to pay two salaries. Hansen's food was as good as Nasser's. I agreed to take him on, but half wondered if, in the next few weeks, there might be a third, fourth, and fifth working partner of Nasser's I'd also have to hire. When I build a restaurant, I have a strong idea of what I want in terms of the design and food. As I'm neither a carpenter nor a chef, my job is to convey my ideas to the builders and chefs who are skilled enough to put it all together, and, hopefully, take it to another level. A few years earlier, I directed two feature films and was struck by how similar the roles of restaurateur and hair director were, and how dependent I was, in both cases, on people whose specific jobs were infinitely superior to mine. I felt guilty about this until I had a stroke 4 years ago. Being half paralyzed, I could finally recognize what a crucial role I played in the making of my restaurants and films. Just a pity it took a stroke to make me realize this. The only thing the chefs and I disagreed on was whether to put a hamburger on Baltazar's menu. Coming from a formal uptown restaurant, Nasser and Hansen were reluctant. For Baltazar to succeed, it had to appeal to people like me, who would be repelled by uptown starchiness. By stressing the casual downtown character of Baltazar, I convinced the two chefs to put hamburgers on the menu. Unintentionally, hamburgers quickly became our best-selling dish. Next photos, night moves. Karl Lagerfeld at a party in his honor in 2012. Baltazar's menu for the Raw Bar. Keith McNally with chefs Riyad Nasser and Lee Hansen the week of the restaurant's opening in April 1997. Isabella Rossellini speaks with Madonna at a 1997 party. A classically trained sculptor based the marble works on two Baltazar waitresses. Jay-Z celebrates the opening of one of his stores in 2009. And Victoria Beckham. The night before we opened, I took a final look at Baltazar and sank into a depression. The dining room looked effing terrible and hadn't come out the way I imagined it. It had been the same with the films I directed. I've always found it impossible to recreate something without making such serious compromises that the outcome falls far short of my original idea. Baltazar opened on April 21st, 1997. The response was staggering. Its 180 seats were full for breakfast, lunch, and dinner right from the start. Baltazar was a restaurant hurricane that caused a sensation in New York's cultural life. In the first 2 months, Baltazar was mentioned in three different television sitcoms, and New York Magazine published a map of the supposedly preferred tables of famous New Yorkers, half of whom had never been there. The public and press response was exhilarating for the floor staff, but a nightmare for the kitchen. Hansen and Nasser were often angry at me and argued that the absurdly high number of meals they had to cook was detrimental to the food's quality. They were right, of course, but when you're surfing the crest of a terrific wave, it's hard to think about the sharks lurking beneath. Toward the end of a 900-cover brunch, I'd see Nasser standing by the kitchen door, scowling, arms folded, counting how many people were still waiting to be seated. But he and our original crew of cooks did a remarkable job in those far-away, heady days. I'm forever thankful that Nasser coaxed me into hiring Hansen, as without him, Baltazar would never have survived the maelstrom. Nasser and Hansen remained at Baltazar for more than 15 years, and apart from 9/11, the restaurant's finances increased every year. An eternal pessimist, I believed Baltazar's success would not continue without them. For this reason, and because I enjoyed working with them, I offered the pair working partnerships in my next two restaurants, Pastis and Schiller's Liquor Bar. In 2009, I brought them in as full partners in Minetta Tavern. Over the years, I've noticed one unvarying trait in my customers. If offered a free drink once every 20 visits, they love the restaurant. But if offered a free drink 19 visits in a row, but not on their 20th visit, they're pissed off and resent the restaurant. I've since realized this holds true outside of restaurants. Productive partnerships between strong individuals often end contentiously, and my relationship with Nasser and Hansen was no exception. As always, the relationship broke up over money. They were both earning considerable salaries and profits from four of my restaurants, but when they asked for equity in Baltazar, I finally said no. Feeling aggrieved, they quit. 4 years later, the two of them opened the phenomenally successful Franchette. Sadly, since they left Baltazar, the three of us haven't spoken, which is a pity, as I'm very fond of Nasser, and I miss him terribly. He's also the godfather of my son George. Fortunately, Baltazar continued to be as busy as ever, but nothing lasts forever, and Baltazar, like all restaurants, will ultimately go out of favor and close. A month after the opening, I was walking through Soho, feeling quite proud of Baltazar's success, when I overheard two women talking disparagingly about its food. Crushed, I uncharacteristically introduced myself and startled the two women by offering them a free dinner if they would agree to give Baltazar a second chance. They returned a week later and ordered a full meal, including wine and dessert. After they had wiped their plates clean, I unctuously approached their table, preparing to luxuriate in their compliments. When the shorter of the two piped up, "Thank you for dinner, Mr. McNally, but to be honest, we don't like the food any more than the last time. If anything, less so." My stroke paralyzed my right side. The pandemic paralyzed Baltazar. Donald Trump paralyzed the will of half the American people. Each of these dreadful incidents convinced me not to succumb to adversity, but to remember Dylan Thomas's lines, "Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Rage, rage." A vaccine for COVID appears to be on the horizon. Trump has lost the election, and Baltazar finally reopens in January. The rage is over, for now the light shines again. For now. Fire Starters by Alice Hines, with photographs by Paul Octavius. Before we all spend our days on Zoom, Twin Flames Universe used the power of its Facebook group and webcams to spread a gospel of eternal love and build a business. Is it a cult, as some ex-members allege, or the outermost extremes of influencing? Opening photos, the gurus. Shalaya and Jeff Ion run Twin Flames Universe, a sort of therapeutic spiritual reality show from their Michigan home with all the familiar trappings of the modern YouTube star. And The Seeker. When Katie first joined Twin Flames Universe, she wanted to know if any of the love she had experienced was real. Katie woke to the sound of waves. She was in the back of her car, parked by foggy cliffs that hid the highway. Staying here felt nice, like camping. She peed in a mason jar and ate yogurt from her cooler. Not even the hikers knew that a woman was sleeping in her car at the trailhead. Katie drove to the hospital. In the waiting room, she read articles on her phone. How is arachnoiditis diagnosed? What is cerebrospinal fluid? Her back sparked with pain. She took a deep breath and opened up YouTube. Twin Flame Rejection, the video title read. A woman with many pigtails and rosy cheeks sat shoulder to shoulder with her husband. They spoke about what it was like to be separated from your twin flame, the person created by God as your divine counterpart. There is nothing outside of you that prevents you from being with your love, the man said. Only you. Twin Flame gurus were easy to find on YouTube in the fall of 2017. These gurus popped up amid videos on astrology, tarot, healing crystals. The gist was that every human had a complementary partner whose being was attracted to their own, a kind of uber soulmate. Jeff and Shalaya, the couple in the video, were relationship coaches in Michigan. They had all the trappings of YouTubers. The hey, everyone, the like and subscribe, the faces perfectly illuminated by camera lights. Jeff, then in his late 20s, geeked out on video games. Shalaya, in her early 30s, was an amateur photographer. Their videos attracted tens of thousands of views, occasionally more than 150,000. They also had a private Facebook group, which currently has more than 14,000 members, and classes on Google Hangouts 4 times a week. Students shared their relationship problems, while Jeff and Shalaya extracted sublime truths about their hopes and traumas. Subscriptions to the full run of this therapeutic reality show and its offshoots currently cost $4,444. The appeal of Twin Flames Universe was that you could have what Jeff and Shalaya apparently had, what Shalaya called a deeper level of oneness, a harmonious twin flame union. The following spring, Katie paid Jeff for a private coaching session. She wanted to know if any of the love she experienced was real. If it was, why was she still alone? Jeff didn't answer that question, at least directly. How do you feel? Jeff asked over Google Hangouts. He sounded far away, and there was occasionally a lag and crackle, but he scrutinized her through the screen. Katie paused to articulate herself. She felt afraid to receive Jeff's guidance, she explained, because most of her past experiences of love were followed by pain. Jeff told her that only she could fix herself. He suggested that she was not alone because she was not made alone, and asked her to surrender herself to God. At one point, Katie told him, My twin flame won't talk to me and thinks I'm crazy and has told all my family members. He doesn't love me, Jeff echoed in a mocking, high-pitched voice. As the session continued, Katie cried and lashed out and giggled and stared blankly. None of it seemed to satisfy Jeff. Exhausted, she grew quiet. She'd made progress, Jeff said, noting that when Katie watched the video later, you're going to see 49 minutes of you getting better and better. Jeff and Shalea confirmed what she already suspected. Her ex was indeed her twin flame. Perhaps Katie was holding herself back, they suggested. Her pain was rooted in the reality she chose to create. And health issues could stem from one's current thinking or past life behavior. Your body is an extension of your mind, meaning your mind is primary, and your mind creates the body, Jeff told Katie in one class. Not food or exercise, added Shalea, or medical care, said Jeff. Part of her sensed it might be a scam, but she was willing to try anything. A statuesque blonde with a throaty laugh, Katie had moved to the Bay Area after earning 2 undergraduate science degrees. For years, she spent her days in a university DNA lab and her evenings listening to techno records. On the weekends, she did yoga and went to clubs, festivals, or raves. Katie met her ex at Burning Man. Katie is not her real name. She asked me to call her that because it's safe and generic. He was the rare man taller than her. Their outfits matched, and they later found out they shared many of the same references, interests, and beliefs. They went on to spend nearly 2 years together. Then she got into a car accident, followed by medical leave, disability, surgeries, and pain. They broke up. After her third spine operation, she was struggling to walk normally. She briefly left the Bay Area, then a flare-up of pain from her spinal cord sent her back. She lived out of her storage unit and car. A new apartment proved evasive, as did old friends. The energy healer Katie saw couldn't tell her what was wrong. Neither could any of a dozen doctors or therapists. Next photo of Katie is by Benjamin Rasmussen. According to testimonials in the Facebook group, Twin Flames Universe yielded perks beyond romance. Students shared stories of miraculous transformations. Some made money, found new careers, healed their depression. They did it without visiting Jeff and Shalea in person. These were miracles that could be accessed from the comfort of your computer chair or, in Katie's case, a coffee shop. To see results, Katie needed to commit. Some followers went to great ends. They moved cities and countries to be near the twin flames that Jeff and Shalea affirmed for them. Others spent years waiting to magnetically attract exes. Still other followers found harder paths to their perfect partners. Some discovered that their twin flame was of a sex they didn't usually date. Others who identified as male or female announced that that was not really the case. They changed their names and pronouns, bought new wardrobes, and came out to their families and colleagues. They were eager to explore the divine genders that Jeff and Shalea had confirmed through God. Long before COVID-19 turned global communications into a giant video chat, Twin Flames Universe was spreading its gospel and building its own world on Facebook, Google Hangouts, and Zoom. Today, followers order meal plans through Jeff and Shalea's startup, Divine Dish, attend Sunday service at their Church of Union, and resolve trauma in mind alignment process sessions. Its coaches help recruit new clients via Facebook ads and community outreach. Next photo by Paul Octavius. The mission. Jeff and Shalaya's ambitions have grown with their followers. Last year, they founded the Church of Union, which Jeff said seeks to unify all religion under one spiritual umbrella. And this photo shows Jeff and Shalaya poolside, yet not dressed in swimsuits, dressed in all black athleisure clothing. Everywhere I went, they went with me because they were on my phone, one former member told me. Over time, Katie started spending more time online in video calls all day. Her twin flames friends spanned the globe. They were doctors, business owners, stay-at-home parents, students. Most were single. They shared memes and past traumas in group chats. Twin Flames Universe would eventually include a sales team, a media team, vice presidents, HR. It had flexible hours and like-minded colleagues. And just as at any other ideologically impassioned startup, Katie, who would eventually become a coach herself, hoped she would be saving the world while making a profit. Katie now estimates that she spent around $10,000 on classes, coaching, books, products, and more during her time with the group. God has sent this lead to you for a very specific purpose, began the spreadsheet where Katie and other coaches kept track of potential clients. Your one and only job here is to communicate to them that they have finally found what it is they have always been searching for. A cornerstone of the community's spiritual practice is the mirror exercise, a tool, as one YouTube page said, to help you create whatever it is you desire in your reality. Rather than blaming others, followers were taught to take responsibility. At times, they shifted around the pronouns of sentences. One woman posted that she was having a hard time clearing the upset around my twin filing a restraining order and making false statements in it. She should look within. You put a restraining order on yourself, a community member wrote on Facebook. You made false statements. Why did you do that? Once followers addressed their deep-seated traumas and fears, they'd usually start to feel better. One student told me he was able to stop taking antidepressants and anxiety medicine. Another healed her fear of flying. Next photo by Paul Octavius. The mission shows Jeff and Shalaya poolside. The mirror exercise was said to obtain especially dramatic results with a coach. Gabe Green, a Twin Flames coach living in California, was one of a select group of students who used it to realize he was transgender. Literally, a week ago, I would have sworn to you, and did to several of you, that I was 100% a woman, Gabe wrote in a blog post called Suddenly Always Being a Man that appeared on his website in early 2020. After nearly 2 years as a member of Twin Flames Universe, Gabe had not yet found his harmonious union. Then, two community members reached out to talk, saying they'd been speaking with Jeff and Shalaya. They had an important question for Gabe. In your sex life, do you like to give or receive? They ask only that Gabe consider the question, but he immediately knew that it was a pathway to explore. In a subsequent session with his coaches, Gabe allowed himself to admit that he might have a block around his gender. His coaches took him through a meditation and prompted him to feel his way into each gender role, asking at each juncture, "How are you feeling?" The longer it went on, the more his answers seemed to change, until he couldn't help but see it. He was a divine masculine. I was guided perfectly through pointed, logical questions and meditation to the truth, he wrote. As soon as I chose to surrender and claim that energy, there was an immediate shift. I felt more peace and calm than I ever had in my entire life. One of Gabe's coaches revealed that they had channeled his twin flame, a fellow community member and friend, Brianna Manalo. I also felt this to be true, Gabe wrote, adding that it was confirmed by Jeff and Shalea, who are straight and cisgender. When Gabe called Brianna to deliver the news, she thought she fought it at first. She was straight and so attached to my dreams of the man she had long believed to be her twin flame. But the next day, she realized those reservations were mere blocks to the divine. 3 days after Gabe's call, Brianna flew to California on a one-way ticket to see him. Within a few months, Gabe had changed his name and pronouns, cut his hair, and come out to his mother as trans. On Facebook, members congratulated the new couple and thanked their gurus. Jeff and Shalea Ian met through a mutual friend who introduced them on Facebook in 2012. Later, Jeff posted a crass meme on Shalea's wall. A romance was born. Jeff, a Michigan native, was running a vegetarian Airbnb in Hawaii. Shalea, who is Canadian, was working in a hair salon and studying with a spiritual teacher in Sedona, Arizona. She had read about twin flames on the internet and sensed Jeff could be hers. Shalea introduced Jeff to the concept. They tried a few different niches before settling into the current incarnation of Twin Flames universe. Shalea is the more spiritual twin. She's into numerology, pendulum divination, and crystals. Jeff is more business-oriented. Before meeting Shalea, he went by the name Ender Ionathus on his LinkedIn, which described him as a lifestyle design entrepreneur. Shalea was once Megan Plant. Both Shalea and Jeff are from Catholic families with whom they have fallen out. I first interviewed the couple over Zoom. They sat side by side in Aeron chairs. I'd watched almost 50 hours of their content and pored over their private Facebook forum. In addition to their own YouTube videos and free spin-off videos from their coaches, there are at least 600 hours of class videos for purchase. To reach the highest rung on the Twin Flames Universe coaching ladder, one must watch and pay for all. Seeing them respond to my questions was like having the characters on a TV show come to life. Their webcams were at perfect eye level, and they had dressed up. Red lipstick for Shalea, a blazer for Jeff. Armani, he pointed out. Gabe told me that he was starstruck meeting them in person for the first time. I couldn't form sentences, to be honest. While the idea of a soul counterpart is old, the first historical mention of the phrase twin flame I could find was in 1886. There is no soul on this earth that is complete alone, said a character in British author Marie Corelli's best-selling novel, A Romance of Two Worlds, which helped stoke interest in reincarnation in Victorian England. The idea of twin flames seems ready-made for our current digital existence. Finding love is supposedly easier than ever, but young people are reportedly having less sex, and marriage rates are declining in the U.S. and other Western countries. Dating is an algorithmic pursuit. Articles on Goop and Allure and Elite Daily have framed the idea of twin flames as an antidote. It's the preferred term if you're the type of person who checks your friend's horoscopes on the way to Kundalini class. Princess Martha Louise of Norway has called the shaman Dirk Verret her twin flame. Megan Fox has said the same about rapper Machine Gun Kelly. Ryan Gosling filed a restraining order against a stalker who claimed to be his. Once you realize that you can have sex at the push of a button, you want something better than that, Jeff told me. He says at least 80% of the people watching his and Shalaya's YouTube videos are women. In a 2019 video post to Facebook, Jeff and Shalaya marveled at how quickly their business had become profitable. Twin Flames Universe is valued at more than $1 million, closer to $2 million, Jeff said, recalling his broke days just a few years before. This spring, they moved to a five-bedroom, $850,000 house outside of Traverse City, Michigan. Their living room fireplace is flanked by $11,000 worth of amethyst, which Shalaya regularly communes with. I get feelings and thoughts communicated back to me from the crystal, and this is how I found out that this crystal is a female, and that's a male, she said. Icons decorate the mantle and a nearby wall. Krishna, Jesus, Mahavatar Babaji, Lahiri Mahasaya. Jeff and Shalaya's ambitions have grown with their followers. Last year, they founded the Church of Union, which Jeff said seeks to unify all religion under one spiritual umbrella. If the Second Coming were to happen today, where do you think it would happen? Jeff began a lengthy Facebook post. Be logical about its location. We have another place now called the Internet, where everyone in the world can come be at once. Behold, we are the prophesied Second Coming, he continued. Shalaya was the Mother Christ, Jeff the Father Christ. Their yet-to-be-conceived daughter, Grace, meanwhile, was the princess of all creation. Together, the trio was the Master Christ, eternal ruler of all creation by God's loving hand. When I asked Jeff about this declaration, he was reflective. Everyone is a perfect divine being, he suggested. He was the Master Christ. I'm the Second Coming. I'm what was prophesied. And I say that with humility, but there's no other way to say it. Jesus got the same response when he was like, yo, I'm the Son of God. I'm the Messiah. Look, my purpose is to enlighten the world, not to be gentle with it. Not every couple who meets within the community lasts. In March, Victoria Bonilla, a former member living in Alabama, was told by her coach that a fellow female member was her twin flame, she told me. But Victoria wasn't a lesbian, she told the coach, who replied that, actually, the female follower Victoria was paired with is a man, Victoria recalled. I just started crying and felt sick to my stomach, she said. There isn't any part of me that feels good about this, Victoria messaged her coach. Then she tried to switch coaches. Church of Union officials reached out by email. To deny Jeff and Shalaya's word is to deny the word of God and to throw away your harmonious twin flame union. Victoria left the group. Her supposed twin flame is still in it. We really don't tell people, hey, this is your twin flame, Jeff told me. It was one of many occasions where he and Shalaya said one thing and seemed to do another. For instance, feel good in your physical body, no matter the circumstances, Shalaya advised one woman in a Facebook comment thread. Just before, in the same thread, she told a female member that she was a man inside, and that her female body was a choice she had made to hide from God because you felt ashamed. The woman left the group soon after. Twin Flames Universe teaches that love is between masculine and feminine counterparts. It also positions itself as a champion of LGBTQ plus acceptance. That's because it claims to define masculine and feminine by energy rather than bodies. We're all created 100% masculine energy or 100% feminine energy, said Shalaya. The gurus insist that members who discover a new divine gender are never pressured to change their outward appearance. Still, many of them do, starting with their names, pronouns, dress, and hair. A small number medically transition. At least 3 followers, including Gabe, are currently taking hormones. Meanwhile, at least 5 women who resisted accepting their new gender ended up leaving the group. I have been blocked by the group and told, and everyone I knew in the group since, I told them I did not accept being a divine masculine, one ex-member told me. Katrina and Ann Irwin joined Twin Flames Universe in summer 2017, the rare couple to sign on together. 2 years before, they found Jeff and Shalaya online and admired that they offered spiritual guidance that seemed inclusive of their sexuality and supportive of their personal journey. The pair became coaches, taking on more responsibility and earning around $120,000 combined in 1 year. Eventually, Jeff and Shalaya named them VPs of sales, a non-paying, labor-intensive position. They managed a small army of coaches responding to leads. How would you feel about owning your own private jet? The couple recalled Jeff asking them. One day in class, Jeff told Anne he wanted her to explore taking a male name and pronoun. Anne was open to the discussion. She admitted that she felt a masculine energy inside. For example, there's been contexts where I've been wanting to bro out with dudes playing baseball, she said. Jeff asked Anne intimate questions about her sex life. Her kids. Weren't they lying if they didn't call her dad? And her pronouns. Jeff stressed to Anne the importance of picking a more male-sounding name. She seemed hesitant. He suggested Dan. Jeff would never force Anne to do anything, he emphasized in that class. You'll notice we only ever use the pronoun for anyone that they prefer, because this is so sensitive and that's just not how we roll. For $2,222, I purchased and watched Anne's sessions. These would be juicy classes, Jeff announced to students tuning in live. But over several classes, Anne grew resistant. You guys look dumb as F hiding behind the lie still, Jeff texted Katrina, when Anne still hadn't adopted a male name. In another text, he added, take a guy's name and a guy's pronoun, or I will need to put someone else in charge of sales who does respect my work. When I asked Jeff about these text messages directly, he said, there's the difference between what is said and what is communicated. He also said I was missing important context about his relationship with Anne and Katrina. They were planning a hostile takeover of their business and to steal their clients, Shalaya said. They were megalomaniacs, Jeff added. They wanted power. We made no plans and no attempts to undermine their business in any capacity ever, said Katrina. Eventually, Anne had had enough. In front of everyone, she said that she had thought Jeff had only been conducting a brief experiment and reminded him that she had written a post expressing how uncomfortable she was and would like it to end. Jeff said he hadn't read it, only skimmed. Anne's anger was further proof that he was right about her masculinity. As the class came to a close, there was a long pause. Anne gazed at the space in front of her computer's camera, while Katrina seemed to hold her breath. Anne acquiesced. Katrina broke out in a big smile and buried her face in her hands. Jeff applauded dramatically. The next afternoon, Anne and Katrina were hit with a flurry of notifications. Twin Flames Universe had blocked them on its social media platforms. Jeff and Shalea posted a 46-minute video online explaining why they had released the couple. Anne and Katrina were a leech on the system. Their negativity was dampening the enthusiasm of other coaches. About a year later, I spoke to Anne and Katrina in a series of phone calls. They had found new jobs and had moved on from their time in the online world they now consider a cult. Twin Flames Universe seemed so progressive at first, Katrina told me, saying, okay, what happens if Anne goes on a journey and redefines as masculine, seemed fun and open-minded. It aligned with our views on gender, which is that it doesn't really matter and is very fluid. Next photos, the followers. Anne and Katrina were the rare couple to join Twin Flames Universe together. They liked that it initially seemed inclusive of their sexuality and supportive of their personal journey. Photo by Wolf Bradley. But in the end, the community's LGBTQ plus acceptance was superficial, they suggested. They believe Jeff picks on people who threaten him as a way to test his power. Jeff and Shalea dispute both these claims and reject the idea that they coerce people to change their gender. Jeff admits, however, that the videos with Anne make him look bad. I'm sure if that's all I saw, I might even agree with you and say, wow, what a jerk, what a controlling psychopath. But that's not the reality. In fact, perhaps, this is what Anne needed me to say to her in order for her to be set free, he texted me later that night. She needed me to become so vulnerable that she could ruin my life and reputation forever and hold the keys in her hand to that slaughter. Why did I allow it? Because I am a humble servant of God. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selection by Mark Hoffman.